On the second mountain, we realize how much we need other people in our lives. There, mercy and grace triumph over judgment and bitterness and achievement.
Greetings and welcome to the Unleashed Generosity Podcast, exploring the intersection of faith, service, philanthropy, and community. I'm your host, Aaron Scott. Hey everyone, welcome to the Unleashed Generosity Podcast, Season 2. If you are here for the first time, welcome in. And if you are back, welcome back after a long hiatus. When I left you last in December of 2020, I said that I thought I'd have a couple more episodes before the end of the year. And here we are over 18 months later. I'm just now coming out with Season 2. And I want to tell you a little bit about where I've been, because I think that really influences a lot about what to expect moving forward with the podcast. I hope that if you're here, you're showing up because you are interested in conversations about faith and how faith impacts the nonprofit sector, people striving to do good in the world through their faith congregations or through other organizations, whether they're faith-based or secular, the desire to make an impact, to reduce violence, to promote more of a healthy environment and a sustainable environment, to address difficult, challenging topics like racism or like homelessness or domestic abuse, healthcare inequalities. The list could go on and on and on of the many challenging issues we face that confront us and that in our society we deal with in our faith congregations or our organizations that are maybe for-profit organizations, but that have a social good focus. So that's the focus of the podcast. We interview clergy members, nonprofit leaders, either that executive directors of organizations, or maybe people who work as fundraisers or marketing professionals, or people who are board members. We interview volunteers and donors. We interview just community members who are passionate about a cause. And so welcome into this conversation. The first season, we had conversations discussing a variety of issues, including how we respond to COVID-19, solutions to respond to persistent poverty. We talked about the environment and sustainability and support of the land and farmers and agriculture and food systems. We talked about the increasing divisiveness in our electoral systems and what faith calls us to in terms of engaging in a pluralistic society, but engaging in the political sphere. Obviously, not all people come to the same conclusions about what the best thing to do is. And really, over the last year, it struck me, maybe you as well, just how it seems that the divisions and the disagreements seem to be more stark and more heated and more contested than ever before. People don't agree about the best solutions and the best way to move forward. And it's not a matter of just accepting that we might agree to disagree, but it's become almost you have to pick a side, and the other side are not just those who disagree with you, but they're your enemies. They're the people that you are either to convert or to defeat. And so the last year has been challenging for me as I think about how do people of faith, or people maybe who aren't sure what they believe anymore, maybe they've deconstructed some aspects of their faith, or they're challenging some aspects of their faith, or they're growing beyond what they used to believe and they're rethinking some things. How do those people take their values, whatever they think they are, and engage with them in the world in a way that makes a positive difference? And is there a way forward that we can see past our differences and still find ways to work together? Or are we relegated to simply finding those we agree with, working with them, and everyone else is just that, our opponents? I would like to suggest that there's a lot that we can do together, and we don't always have to agree, but that we need to find ways to have mutual respect and find common ground. The last year, part of why I've been radio silent on this podcast was that I went through a career change. And really, I went through, I would say, a midlife crisis, if you will. I've been thinking about what the best way is to describe, you know, the range of emotions, the range of thoughts, the range of experiences that I've had over the last year. And I couldn't quite put it into words. I didn't have a framework for describing it. And just about a month ago at my church where I attend, Hopwood Christian Church, my pastor and a mentor to me for a long time, Pastor Tim Ross, gave a sermon where he talked about two stages of life. And I want to play for you a short, it's about 7 minute section of this sermon that Tim delivered, because I think it really frames for me part of the experience that I had in the past year. And it frames for me part of, I think, what we've been dealing with in society. And so after this snippet of Tim's sermon, I want to come back and share a few reflections on that. And then I also want to tell you a little bit about how reflecting on those experiences and thinking about it through these two stages of life, what that's going to mean in terms of season two of the podcast. So Tim's going to start by talking about a book by Richard Rohr, a Franciscan priest. And that book is Falling Upward, A Spirituality for the Two Halves of Life. And he's also going to mention The Second Mountain by David Brooks.
Richard Rohr speaks of this period of intense creativity and hard work, and he calls it the first half of life. It's not really a calendar thing, but it's more of a phrase that gets to the state of our souls in this period of our lives when we're building stuff, when we're building careers, building workplaces, raising families, when we've got our reputations on the line, when we're stuffing our bank accounts and working to build ministries. It is this first half of life that's usually very achievement oriented, when we're trying to take life by the scruff of the neck and succeed. It's an exciting time, and all of us are energized to see what our graduates and the folks that we ordain are going to create. But, says Rohr, at some point in that first half of life, disaster inevitably strikes. At some point in our lives, if we live long enough, we're going to suffer a crippling failure. We'll hit a roadblock, or maybe something big and solid will hit us. We will be wounded by a twist of fate, or by blows from an enemy, or by a breakdown in our health, or by a relationship that blows up, or by tragic sadness, or who knows, maybe it'll just be our own stupidity and hubris that gets us. We will endure such a blow or a series of blows that we will be knocked right out of that first half of life, that first mountain that we're climbing, and we'll enter into a period of intense suffering. Maybe that suffering's going to come to us because of an addiction, or maybe it's going to be a massive moral failure, or maybe it'll be a business failure, or maybe a relational failure that will lay us flat on our backs. When we suffer, we're going to be thinking, man, our lives are over. This is horrible. This is the end of things as I know it. Our reputations will be wounded beyond repair. And we will think that we simply will not be able to endure it. Our lives will be over, not worth living anymore. And that is when, says Richard Rohr, the second half of our lives can actually begin. David Brooks writes opinion pieces for the New York Times. He spent the first half of his life scaling the heights of his profession. He did that well. He's all over TV and radio. He writes op-ed columns for the Times. Brooks made it to the top, but that didn't stop his life from falling apart. When his kids left for college, Brooks' marriage fell apart. he discovered, he says, that he actually had no close friends, and he found himself alone in an empty apartment. He sank into depression, and he wondered if his life was over. Thankfully, Brooks discovered what Rohr calls the second half of life. And Brooks documents this coming back to life in his book entitled The Second Mountain. And in this book, he describes how he passed through this period of suffering and pain to find a richer, fuller, more gracious experience of existence. And on this second mountain of life, Brooks says, if we're willing to be changed by it, if we're willing to bear up under suffering and let it teach us, if we're humble, if we're open, if we pay attention to that still small voice of the spirit that says, this is the way, walk in it, we might just get through. On the second mountain, we learn that God specializes in second chances, that suffering doesn't have to put an end to us. On the second mountain, our attitudes, our goals, our personality begins substantive change. On the second mountain, we realize how much we need other people in our lives. Their mercy and grace triumph over judgment and bitterness and achievement. On the second mountain, we learn to choose service to others over prestige for ourselves. We learn how to contribute rather than simply acquire more. On the second mountain, we experience a quest for the happiness of others more than just our own personal joy. On the second mountain, Brooks said that he's learning to leave behind the habits that served only himself. He's on a bigger, deeper, more generous, more joyous mountain on which he now focuses more on service to others and directs his attention more to God. Brooks writes, you don't climb the second mountain the way that you climbed the first mountain. You conquer that first mountain. You identify the summit and then you claw your way to the top. You are conquered by the second mountain. You surrender to some summons, and you do everything necessary to answer that call. On the first mountain, he says, you tend to be ambitious, strategic, independent. On the second mountain, you tend to be relational, relentless, intimate.
All right. So there were a few points in Tim's sermon that I really wanted to unpack a little bit and that really moved me and challenged me. And the first was when he was talking about in the first season of life, the first mountain, how our lives are very goal-oriented. And along that comes an achievement mindset. And that's great. One of the aspects of, you know, achievement that I've been thinking about is how reputation plays a role in that. And I think he even mentions reputation at one point, this idea of creating a reputation that then you have to protect as part of how you achieve. It's part of how you, you know, gain the ability to be well known, that you do quality work, that you have something of value to offer, and all that's great. And the reputation can also be something then that has to be maintained. And so once we find communities where we share common values, we have this reputation, we have our tribe that we want to fit in with, and we're incentivized to sort of maintain the status quo, to fit in, to be a part of the group and to not rock the boat. And that can be a very healthy thing. Being a part of a tribe, fitting in, can lead to a lot of stability, a lot of acceptance, And that can lead to a lot of growth. But the flip side is that it can also lead to conforming to the status quo and to even stagnation, if it means unquestioningly buying into the perspectives of your camp, of your tribe, and not even being willing to consider other perspectives. How true is that for us, not just as individuals, but also in our faith communities as we go throughout our spiritual journeys and for our nonprofit organization? Once we identify donors and supporters who feel like they're part of our tribe that support our mission, we have that incentive to not want to upset them, to not want to say anything that's going to potentially make them want to consider not supporting us. And so again, there's this tendency to lean towards being more conservative, not rocking the boat, not wanting to talk about, you know, potentially offensive or divisive things, not say anything that they might, you know, potentially disagree with you about. I can't tell you how many times working as a fundraiser for the last 5 years that I've heard this basic rule: you don't discuss religion or politics when you meet with donors. And it doesn't matter if you agree or disagree with the points being brought up by a donor, just don't go there. You don't go there. If they go there, then, you know, avoid the conversation or try to steer it in another direction, because it doesn't matter how much you agree with them. Even if they find one point that you disagree with or that they disagree with you about, it could potentially sour the relationship. I think there's some wisdom in that, but I also think that that's kind of a fear-based mentality about, you know, how we approach any relationship, including a relationship with a donor. The problem with such an approach is that it encourages silence. It doesn't say to the fundraiser, to the executive director, to the pastor, to the leader of the faith congregation, whoever it is, we want you to be fully present and fully honest about who you are and what your values. We want you to remain silent if you have something to say that you think may be controversial. And it diminishes transparency. It assumes a worst case scenario where if we choose to discuss a topic that we think somebody else may have a problem with, that we assume it's going to inevitably lead to harm for the organization or it's going to harm our relationships. And I don't believe that that's true. I think we have the capacity and the ability to discuss difficult topics that, yeah, sure, it has the possibility of leading to division, but it also has the possibility of leading to greater understanding, or at least the ability to mutually agree to disagree and to just, you know, move on. I'm sure it's true for some, and it's true for maybe many donors, that, you know, they're looking for faith congregations to be a part of or nonprofit organizations where they want to know that all the supporters agree with them on every single, you know, issue and every single point and every single perspective they have. And they want to ensure that the staff and all the stakeholders are on the same page. But I think what we're seeing is that we're seeing more people are really interested more in a genuine authenticity. We see one thing going on post-COVID for sure is that attendance at faith congregations at times of worship is down. And as a result of that, you're going to see over time, if that continues, giving being down. And so we have to ask the question, if maintaining this status quo of not saying anything too controversial is actually turning off some people, if people are actually looking for, even if it's something that they may not disagree with, at least I want to hear what you think and I want to see that you're authentic and honest and genuine. I can at least respect that. I don't want to suggest that this means that our organizations should become wishy-washy on their values in some way. I think they should be very clear about what they believe. But what I'm suggesting is that many organizations, I think, need to intentionally undertake difficult, in-depth conversations to identify what their true core values are and what are maybe issues that are secondary or tertiary. If there are core essentials that are, you know, the core things about your faith that others must agree with, then yes, be clear about what those are. But if there are things that are not essential that you can say, well, this is my opinion, but I'm willing to work or, you know, agree to disagree with somebody, but still find common ground, I think that's an important difference for us to know in our own selves, in our own communities, and for us to be able to explore with others. Again, in a cooperative, you know, sort of mindset, as opposed to an oppositional sort of mindset. Is there a core calling or mission that your organization stands for that you say, this is what we're all about and we're not going to waver on that? That's great. But are there other ways in which we can say to donors and supporters, look, we're not necessarily going to be taking, up issues and causes that aren't central to our mission. And, you know, we're going to leave room for donors who may disagree or have different points of view about different things to still be a part of our community, because we're not really going to wade into taking a position on every single issue that comes about. I think that's what we're seeing, you know, is this shift again in people who are, you know, engaging with faith congregations and engaging with nonprofit organizations, is they just want to see that genuine authenticity. And I know that that was absolutely true for me. In the last year, as I was searching for jobs and I was interviewing with different organizations, it wasn't enough just to say, I'm a Christian. In fact, in some instances, I found myself less attracted to some Christian organizations because it seemed that their long list of beliefs, their faith statement was like 50 items long. And the sort of idea was that if you didn't believe all 50 things, then you're not welcome here, or you know this, then you're not, we're not sure that you are, you know, are on board with what we're about. I was much more drawn to an organization that had a much more short and succinct, maybe, statement of faith, just saying kind of, we believe in Jesus, we believe in the church, we believe in the church, you know, being about redemption in the world, but left room for in space for diversity of perspective and diversity of thought on a number of different issues, and how, you know, different Christians are going to come to different, you know, points of view about how their faith leads them to engage in the world, and true for other faith groups as well. I was attracted to organizations that were a little bit more flexible, a little bit more grace-filled, a little bit more, second mountain mindset, going back to Tim's sermon. You know, it seems to me, and again, I don't speak for Salvation Army on this podcast. My job, that after I left ETSU, I've accepted a position with Salvation Army here in Johnson City. And one of the things that attracted to me about Salvation Army was the idea that they're very clear that they are a Christian organization. It's a church that has a nonprofit social outreach, you know, component. We have a homeless shelter that we run. And I was very drawn to the ministry and the work that they do in our community because I think it's impactful. But I was also drawn to the fact that they weren't sort of prescriptive on their employees have to believe, you know, these 50 things. And going back to that idea of conformity or silence, I think that can be a really problematic thing if you, as an employee of an organization, are being pressured to remain silent on your views or on a certain issue or topic because you think it might upset a donor, or it may conflict with, you know, one of the 50 things on the organization's, you know, faith statement. I think that can lead to a really unhealthy organizational culture. Promoting silence and telling stakeholders that we don't want them to fully show up as their full selves can lead to frustration, or even worse, as we're going to explore in an upcoming episode, it can lead to a culture of abuse, where people in power within the organization are trying to protect the organization at all costs. And that might mean even treating individuals within the organization as people to be exploited or oppressed. So that's one of the themes that we're going to come back to multiple times throughout season two, is this topic of what are the benefits and what are the challenges of having disagreement within our organizations. I myself, again, finding myself more drawn to organizations that are more broad, more gracious, more open-minded, and less dogmatic, less fundamentalist, less prescriptive. But that's just me, you know, and there's pros and cons to different approaches. I think, again, these are conversations that organizations need to be having about what is our culture, what kind of culture are we trying to create, what do we believe, what's essential, and what's not. Another thing that really struck me about Tim's sermon was about the crisis and the catalyst for change that will inevitably come along at some point in our lives, the thing that's going to knock us off the first mountain of life and leave us wondering how we can move forward. You know, there's been no shortage of disruptive and downright, you know, unsettling experiences over the last 2 years that fit this description. Just let me read a summary to you of the last 2 years of our lives. And it can be just daunting just hearing it. It might bring back, you know, trauma to you in some way. COVID-19 leads to the loss of millions of lives, leads to the disruption of our normal daily routines, the identification of gaps in our healthcare systems, in our economic systems, raises, you know, new questions, or maybe questions that we should have been paying attention to all along about the treatment of workers, who's an quote unquote essential worker and who is not. What does it mean to properly compensate people for their work and treat people fairly for their efforts? The development of vaccines and treatments, and then the ensuing public dialogue that ensued about what exactly are our responsibilities to take the vaccine or not? What are our responsibilities to not just keep our families and ourselves safe, but do we have some responsibility to protect our neighbors across the street and across the globe? These questions began, you know, were joined by a very overdue but essential conversation about race in America after the murders of George Floyd and Ahmaud Arbery and Breonna Taylor. And this led to intense dialogue about a myriad of issues, such as systemic intergenerational poverty, mass incarceration, disproportionate treatment in the criminal justice system of people of color, especially African Americans, a contentious election cycle that ensued for the presidency of the United States that took place and then what had to be decided by the courts on how to count votes, and eventually Congress certifying the election results. And yet still today, some people questioning those election results. Some people, because of that fear or the questioning of the legitimacy of the election, leads to the assault on the U.S. Capitol on January 6, 2021, followed by the withdrawal of troops from Afghanistan and the end of a 20-year war on terror, followed by the emergence of a new geopolitical conflict when Russia invaded Ukraine, the new leaked Supreme Court document that points towards the overturn of Roe versus Wade and our nation's longstanding struggle over abortion rights, and most recently, the reemergence of another longstanding debate about gun rights and the Second Amendment in light of the tragedies in Buffalo, New York, and in Texas. Friends, we've been through some really heavy stuff. And if you don't find something in that list that shook you and rattled you and caused you to re-examine some things, then I'm not sure you still have a pulse and are with us. Which brings us back to the second mountain we find ourselves on, and the question of how are we going to engage such a troubled and turbulent world? Just like in the world, not everyone who listens to this podcast is going to agree with everything I say, and that's okay. I'm not looking for uniformity of thought. It's not required here. Conservatives are most welcome. Liberals, come on, pull up a chair. Christians, move on over a little bit and make some room for your Jewish and Buddhist and Sikh and Muslim and agnostic and atheist brothers. Straight white folks like me need to, you know, say, hey, make room for our LGBTQ, anyone and everyone. Welcome here at this table. Welcome as a part of this conversation. And so I really want to point you towards six values. Here's what to expect in season two. There are six values that are going to be sort of the refrain, the things that we keep coming back to that are going to define the conversations. And I want to point you towards these values because they're the values that I came to as I was doing my job search that I said, you know, these are the things that I'm interested in achieving. These are the things that I think are important. Now, this doesn't mean I have all the right answers. There might be 10 other important topics. And, you know, you might tell me, I think one of those six values is trash. And here's why. You know, I am very open to dialogue. And you're going to hear a variety of voices from a variety of different perspectives on this podcast, and you may disagree with some, and that's completely fine. What we want to do is we want to create civil dialogue. We want to create meaningful, authentic conversations where people can honestly talk about the things that they're struggling with in a way that's respectful and that they're allowed to work through things. We're not going to be canceling anyone here just because they express a certain point of view. However, at the same time, we are going to respect everyone, and everyone will be treated with dignity and respect as a part of this conversation. So here's the six core values and what to expect coming up in season two. The first value is humility. Number two is hospitality. Three, collaboration. Then four is respect. 5 is engagement, and 6 is radical imagination. So I'm excited about season 2. I'm excited you're here. Please subscribe. Go to unleashgenerosity.org, subscribe wherever you listen to your podcast, subscribe. And we'd love it if you did a rating or review. We'd love it if you'd tell somebody who you believe would benefit from being engaged in this community to find the podcast. So share it with your friends. We'll look forward to seeing you soon. Until next time, unleash your own generosity.